Welcome to Everything Belongs, a podcast for those living, creating, leading, and thriving while in the deep end of life. I'm your host, Madison Morgan, leadership coach, creative consultant, and speaker. I coach soulful visionaries and go-getting mavericks who desire to create art of their lives and take their work both deeper and higher. In this show, I'll be bringing you an overflow of conversations with my favorite thought leaders, teachers, healers, and creatives who inspire me to live more fully in my own power, worth, and wholeness, along with offering some episodes where I share my own practical insights, behind-the-scenes peeks into my process, and tools I use on my own journey. There will not be much we shy away from here because at this table, everything belongs. Therefore, you can expect me to ask the uncomfortable, juicy questions. You can expect that you'll hear people you disagree with on the podcast and maybe even ideas you've never previously considered. I trust you with your own discernment as we take this deep dive. You can expect to laugh, cry, learn, and be challenged by the guests as they share their diverse experiences and views of the world. It's my hope through learning to see that all of it belongs that you will develop a more sovereign way of holding yourself so you can playfully go after the life, relationships, and career you are made for, to let all parts of yourself have a seat at the table, to lead and create from your deepest truth and become your own source of validation, all because you finally know you're worthy of it. All that's required to get started, that you show up curious and willing. Let's dive in. Well, hello, loves. Today, I am joyfully and so honored to have my friend Morgan Day Cecil on the podcast. Morgan is a beautiful coach and mentor who helps women reconnect to feminine wholeness and heal their own gaze. She's a feminine wholeness coach and really helps people come home to themselves through possibility, delight, innocence, sexuality, and sensuality. And you'll hear in this episode how she describes that through the head, the heart, and the honey pot, which just is so delicious. Morgan and I have very parallel work, and we both come from Christianity. And so in this episode, it was so fun to get to hear her unique perspective on being ousted from the Christian communities that she was in while still holding on to her relationship with Jesus, really understanding her loss of innocence and reclaiming that innocence in wholeness, how she has unhooked from the male gaze and internalized shame that being sexualized young instilled in her, and how she learned to heal her own gaze and reclaim that sovereignty. She talks about the soft gaze. And you'll hear towards the end of this episode, Morgan and I really get into this beautiful riff where we are going back and forth about mysticism and whether or not the ridiculous ways that we like to express ourselves really matter on a spiritual level. We talk about shoulds, judging each other as women, and being the steward of our own emotions. And so we go really deep. We are really playful. We joke about Dolly Parton in the best of ways because we both love Dolly Parton. And I really hope you'll enjoy this episode. I had so much fun recording it with Morgan, and I would love to hear your feedback and what you get from it. So as always, I would love for you to leave a 5-star review and a comment and let me know what your favorite point and your favorite takeaway from this was, or share it on social media and be sure to tag me so that I know what you loved about this conversation. Let's go ahead and dive in. Morgan, I'm so pumped to have you on. It has been a long time coming, and just thank you and welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. I've been waiting for this moment. I couldn't wait to share some time with you, Madison, and all of the peeps listening. This is going to be fun.
Yes. So you teach the School of Feminine Wholeness and the Embody Academy, and I think people could guess kind of what that's about, but I'm curious, in your words, if you were describing it to someone who was still in the church, who didn't know what a patriarchy was, and was just doing their life the way that they were told, how would you define your work?
I just help women come home to themselves. That's the simplest way to put it. Just come home. And I think when you hear that, you know what that means. Like, oh, there's a place inside of me that I've been, that I know, but it's been a long time since that I abide there. Mm-hmm. And I just help women come home to that essential place that that place that holds their wholeness, the place that holds all of their possibility, the place that holds their delight.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I do it in a specific way that encompasses what I call head, heart, and honeypot ways of knowing. And it is part embodiment. Like, that's such an important piece right now in this world, is just coming home to our bodies and reclaiming what it means to be in our bodies, to be connected to our sexuality and our sensuality, and to really just be here in a very grounded, substantial way. So that's a key part of it. And then the second part is reclaiming innocence, inner child work, and just the return to delight and playfulness and ridiculousness and just the fun of life. And also that part of us that is capable of unconditional acceptance and witnessing the sacredness in all things and the wholeness in all things. There's just like this genius inside each one of us that we see in a child that just gets it. You know, and it's the all will be well, all will be well, every manner of things shall be well energy. It's like, come play with me energy. It's the I'm so happy to see you energy. It's the what happens when we can be truly present and not live based on the past or the fears or the traumas and the conditioning. Mm-hmm. We're just like kids, and we're just able to connect to ourselves and each other with so much love and allowing people to be who they are. And then the third piece is the possibility. It's like, what do we want to create? We have this mind, we have this consciousness that is capable of so much more than we realize. And so what if we really got excited about creating our future and working with our future self and befriending our future self and believing in possibilities? And so this is how we work out our imagination. And so we can use it in service to a better world and the woman we're created to be, instead of letting the imagination get the best of us, which is, you know, brings us into a spiral that we've all been down, back into the past and the same old, same old. So those three pieces are the practical ways that I help women come home to themselves. Really, it's the body, it's the heart, and it's the mind.
Mm-hmm. I love that so much, because it reminds me of Sacred Enneagram, which is, I don't actually talk about it a lot publicly because of the misinformation about the Enneagram on the internet right now. But some of my teachers are Sacred Enneagram teachers, and head, heart, and gut, or honeypot, as you call it, are the three centers, and wholeness is aligning those three centers and moving from all three.
And so, head, heart, and Gaia?
In gut.
And so, gut. Oh my God. Yes. The wisdom has been there for centuries. I mean, my background is in Tantra. Yeah. And so, the chakra system and the energy system, this is where my teaching comes from. And it's just there. It's part of the perennial wisdom. It's what we know when we slow down and start listening to our own energy, the energy of our body, and also the energy around us. And so it's really cool. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, I'll send you some books on it, some of my favorites. What I love about it is knowing, depending on, like, for anyone listening even, depending on which Enneagram type you identify with, you will predominantly move from one of the centers. And wholeness looks like integrating that to where it's aligned with all three, which, again, you said is chakras, but Enneagram has been teaching it separate from the Hindu teachings for a long time, but they actually overlay and it's, you know.
Is this connected to Cynthia Bourgeau's work?
I don't know Cynthia Bourgeau.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, because she also talks about the three ways of knowing. And she talks about, and this is what I love so much and have borrowed, is the idea that when we align these three ways of knowing, it opens up the imaginal realm. And I love that idea. The imaginal realm is so magical to me. I just want to play in there all day long, but not from a place of spiritual bypassing, from a place of like being super, super grounded and connected to what is, and then also able to access everything that's possible. Like that's a lot of power.
It's so fun. And you mentioned original innocence. I call that true essence. I think people have many different names for that quality that is before the programming, before the trauma, before the imprint of hard things from our families, and even things, you know, we like to blame everything on trauma, but some of it's just like cultural imprints and that make us forget ourselves. Yes. And I keep asking myself that, like,
we try to find like, why did these things happen? But the human journey seems to be that we all have to learn to come home to ourselves.
Yes.
No matter if we had the most horrific trauma, or if we just like grew up in a family that we felt didn't see us, like either way, yes. mm-hmm. we have to come home. When I'm curious for your personal journey, you mentioned like moving away from that innocence and forgetting wholeness. And I'm curious what your journey was like away from that wholeness and then mm-hmm. back to it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't grow up in the church. I came into my faith as a 30-year-old woman. And so I work with a lot of clients who have a story around purity culture and the shame that the church brought on them. But for me, and I really can help them break free from that, but for me, like my loss of innocence came in through, first and foremost, this is hard to talk about, but I know it's safe here. I didn't have a strong connection to my mom, and I really looked for her as a mirror. And when you look to a mother or to a parental figure, and there is not that delight in their eyes, and they're somewhere else, you know, based on their own trauma or wounds. For a child, it's like the biggest rejection. And so for me, it was like searching for who am I, looking for the mirror, most naturally in my mother, and not getting it reflected back to me that I'm someone, a being, a creature worthy of delighting in. And so that caused me to feel like there's something wrong with me. And like we've talked about this, Madison, but there, a lot of us have experienced, like, if we can't really have that embodied safety as a child and that consistency and love and acceptance and seeing, then we're going to start searching for it in all these other ways, either through people pleasing or, for me, it was actually just trying to win the approval of any man in the room. Like, my sexuality became a currency, and it didn't belong to me. I felt like it was a strange concept. I remember as a married woman, as a mother, learning that my body belonged to me, learning that my sexuality belonged to me. Because for me, as growing up and as an adolescent, it seemed like a currency that I could use to exchange for approval or belonging. And I was really looking for it through the male gaze. And I was really looking for it through men in particular, because they, anyway, we could go deeper down that tunnel. But I experienced trauma, rape, sexual abuse, all those things. And the bigger trauma for me was not having a place to talk about it. And I very much internalized that it was my fault, that I was a temptress, that just by nature of being a woman, there was something dangerous about me. And I brought this on myself. I took full responsibility for what happened at 15. And interesting, and maybe this is probably a key part of why I do what I do, and I'm working at the intersection of sexuality and spirituality, but the boys who raped me were quote unquote Christian, and I wasn't Christian. And so there was this idea that they were good and I was bad. And because I wasn't saved, you know, I tempted them into making this choice. And I really did internalize that. I felt like, you know, there's something very shameful about me. So I lived in a state of shame for 15 years. I mean, the rape happened at 15. Earlier separation from innocence happened, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7. But I didn't even know there was another way to be. Like, shame just felt like, you know, I was the fish and shame was the ocean. Like, that was what I was swimming in. And it wasn't really until I became a mom, and I wasn't planning on becoming a mom. So it was a shock, and it was scary as all get out to have the responsibility of another life in the world. But then I began my healing journey in earnest, like learning how to go underneath the shame and reclaim what was lost a long time ago, and to reclaim my original wholeness. And there's like a lot of fun and playfulness inside me that I had no idea was there, because for 15 years I was on antidepressants because of depression and not ever dealing with the root of the issue. And so the only way that I was taught how to deal with it was to get on medication. So I was on all sorts of medication from the time I was 15 until the time my son was born when I was 26. And it was antidepressants and anxiety and help with sleep and basically a whole like cocktail of things that kept me pretty numb. And so when I became a mom and I really got clear, like this is when my journey begins, because I'm not just doing it for myself, I'm doing it for him. And the sad part is I didn't have enough like self-love or self-worthiness at the time to do it for myself. I'd probably still be a wreck. I never had my son, but it was something about that I loved him so much that I was willing to kind of go to the places and go to the pain and go open the doors that I had never been willing to open before to really give myself a chance to come home for myself. And so the work I do in the world is completely, birthed from my own journey and what I needed and what I desired, which ultimately was freedom and belonging to myself, belonging to others, belonging to this beautiful world in a way that felt safe and beautiful.
Thank you for sharing so much of that. And I know people listening, because I know some of the people listening are really going to resonate with what you just shared and just the shame that becomes the identity,
yes,
as opposed to essence and belonging and power and self-ownership that is actually the identity. What you shared about your mother also is, I interviewed Bethany, who wrote the book, The Inner Mother. Mm-hmm. Her brand is The Mother Wound. Oh, wow. And mm-hmm. She talks about how our mothers are our first introduction to the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is not, whenever we can't see our own mothers in joy and in delight and just seeing what's possible for a woman, we internalize what's possible for ourselves. So it makes so much sense that your work, yes, would naturally transition into possibility, yeah, and being a model for possibility.
Yeah, I remember like just looking to her, and I never saw her really light up with happiness, like with joy, with glee, with a lot of expression. She was, I remember this, like in high school, I learned the word aloof, like it was a vocabulary word. And I was like, oh my gosh, I finally have a word to describe my mama. And she just seemed disconnected from her own essence, her own life force, and her own joy. And when I was studying abroad in Italy in my early 20s, I met this woman named Nanda. We met on the train, and she was in her 70s, almost 80s. And she had so much childlike joy in her. Like, she took me under her wing, and she would cackle like a witch, and she would like chase me around the house, spritzing me with like orange peel essence. And she was always teaching me these nursery rhyme songs because she used to be a kindergarten teacher. And I saw in her like, whoa, the possibility of a full-grown woman being in delight, being in joy, like maintaining this like innocence and playfulness, and just, man, it was so fun to be around her. And so she gave me this, she was a mirror for me of this is also possible. And that was enough to begin pursuing it. Like, okay. And this is why I'm so curious about womanhood and how we define womanhood and how we relate to womanhood, is because I believe it's so much, can be so much more fun than it's been made out to be. Because, you know, and how I define femininity, because people always ask me like feminine wholeness, like, what do you mean by feminine? I don't know if I identify with that. And my definition of feminine wholeness has evolved as I've grown. So right now, one of the ways I describe it is it's reclaiming whatever has been dismissed in you, whatever has been discouraged or disrespected or dishonored in you. Like, so much of reclaiming the feminine is going in there and bringing back to life the things that patriarchy, if you want to call it that, purity culture, whatever you want to call it, has disregarded or dismissed, and like really claiming it for yourself again.
I'm really curious about how becoming a mother initiated you, it seems, into having the capacity to be a mother to yourself.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So one of the gifts, I feel like it was just pure grace when I became a mom, was just this idea that I didn't own my son. I got to be a steward for him and a guide for him and a mirror for him of love and possibility and the beauty of being alive. So that was my goal. And then that allowed me to start finding that place in me that could be for myself. And knowing that there was, I think some mothers, at least when I've worked with them and coached them, when they become a mom, their whole world collapses in on that identity as mother. And they lose a sense of connection to themselves because their child becomes their world. And whether it's from a place of just overwhelming love or a place of feeling obligation, like they're not allowed to have things for themselves, that it's really all about the kid now. The grace that I had was like, I was a mom, but I also really, it was a parallel journey of coming home to myself. As I was mothering, I was coming home to myself, and I gave myself that time and that adventure, really. And I didn't feel like my entire responsibility was this person. I felt like I got to be a steward for him, and he was going to be his own person. And he came into this world, and I think a lot of moms will say this too, like your child comes in with a pretty strong like essence. Like I remember it, I laugh at this now because I had this idea. I'm like, I'm going to have a poet. Like my son's going to be so soft and just, he's going to love poetry. And we're just going to have this like really like beautiful, deep connection to each other. He's not going to be anything like a typical boy, you know, that. And then he came out of the womb like wanting to race cars and throw balls, and he was very athletic. And so, and now there's like this beautiful blend that he still like typically like loves all those things, but he also can have very deep conversations. Like I'm his future wife or future partner is so lucky because he's quite special, if I don't say so myself. But all that to say is the journey of motherhood was a mirror, like me learning how to mother him in a way that gave him a lot of space to become who he was created to be, taught me how to mother myself in a way that it wasn't from a place of, you should do this. There's one of the teachings I give is around our gaze and how we can look at something with soft eyes, how we can look at ourselves with soft eyes. And there's a real difference between the soft eye gaze and a stare that penetrates. And the stare is like full of judgment and full of critique. And it's already separating you from that thing that you're trying to connect with. So the mother wound for me was like feeling like I had that stare on me instead of that soft eyes. And so learning how to look at myself with soft eyes, and then because it's also so natural for me to look at my son with soft eyes, but then to turn that as a mirror and to be able to look at myself and these different parts of me that really felt identified with shame, with more softness. There's a lot there, Madison. Like it's, for me, it was a huge teaching and it continues to be. And it's interesting because I have a lot of friends that are like, I forget that you're a mom sometimes because you don't ever talk about your kids. And it's like, no, but it's kind of like, I get it that, the truth is out there, if anyone's listening, like it's kind of boring to hear about your kids, but we know you love them and it's so sweet. And so you can love them, but also it's okay for you to have a life of your own. It's okay for you to have a whole identity that's just yours, that's not connected to your being a mom or being a wife or being a CEO or being this or that. Like you could just be a human being. And so, yeah, where to next, Madison?
I love that so much. And I also really, I don't have children, so I can't speak to
right. Don't your eyes kind of gloss over when somebody like starts talking about kids? Like,
My favorite is being in a circle of women who don't realize they're competing about their children, Everyone who doesn't have kids, it's very obvious that they're all like one-upping about the kid, what they're doing, who's the smartest, IQ, blah blah blah. And that's where I kind of like, I don't feel like I should say anything, like, okay, but
I'm just going to back out now. I would back out with you. I'm like, nope, I don't have a kid. Nope. Don't have two kids.
I'm about to judge whose kid's the smartest at three. You know, it's like, yeah. not, not that I don't care, it's just not my business. Yeah. So it's like they're a kid. I think parents don't realize that they're doing that sometimes.
Yeah. Those conversations have never entertained me. Like I remember being a single mom, being at like a mommy circle, and I was like so bored with the conversation because he was like, you know, what the kids were doing and how they were sleeping, how they're eating, and then like remodeling the kitchen and like, oh my gosh, I have to pick out the fixtures. And it was like the pain that I was like, I'm a single mom. I'm like, I live in like a shoebox. And
yeah, you're like, I want to talk about not my kid right now. That's all I do.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to talk about my kid. I don't want to talk about remodeling the home. Like I want to talk about like, what's the meaning of life? Why are we here? Like, what's it?
They're like, who invited Morgan? Okay, yeah. Making us question this perfect patriarchal life that we have. Okay,
yeah, like, get me out of here.
Oh, I love what you said about the soft gaze, though, because that's actually something that I've worked on with my somatic therapist a lot. Mm. Is realizing as a little person, I became the stand-in image of what my family should be. And so my talents and gifts and persona were in some ways exploited to make the family look good. Wow. And like the things that I did in public that were really celebratory, like I was very good at things as a little person. And I realized very quickly that my mother had a lot of identity in the way other people perceived me. Mm-hmm. And so at home, it wasn't that those things were necessarily celebrated, but in the things that could be public facing were. Yeah. And also being a little person with sexual trauma as well. Mm-hmm. Just that harsh gaze is like that. It can feel so dangerous. And I actually did a whole session just with my therapist who was online saying that she wasn't going to, we weren't going to do camera. And she wasn't going to look at me. In fact, energetically, she was turning her body away from me, but was still there with me, but wasn't looking at me.
Yeah.
To reintroduce me to what being together without a critical, harsh gaze even felt like. It was so powerful. So when you said that, I was like, I have a memory of like when I first understood soft gaze.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. I have a really clear memory when I first understood soft gaze too. I would love to share it if it's okay. Yeah. So on my journey of faith, I came into the church as a 30-year-old woman, and I came in with a lot of like tantric philosophy, which is still alive and well. And I tease that people are like, how did you know Jesus? How did you come to know Jesus? I'm like, well, it was my guru actually that introduced me to Jesus. And they're like, really? Explain that. I'm like, well, he taught me how to meditate. And it was like through meditation that I was able to, have a mystical experience, I guess. And so anyway, my journey into Christianity was very different than a lot of people's. And so it kind of still feels very, my own, but in that, being in the church, like there was a time when we were leading house church and we were very evangelical and that's just the church we found in. And then you start like, oh my gosh, you're going down this stream and like everyone is going in this way and believing these things and the doctrine is so strong. And I started losing my like mystical faith. And I really wasn't comfortable with the church's doctrine, but I didn't want to lose this beautiful relationship that I had with beloved, the Holy Spirit and all that. And it was through my work, actually through healing, self-healing, sexual trauma, that I had a powerful experience with the divine feminine. And it was after a vaginal dearmoring practice where I was healing the sexual trauma specifically that happened when I was 15. And I was asking myself, why am I so afraid of pleasure? Why am I so afraid? Why is it the last thing that I would want to do during the day? Like it was actually part of my homework to become a sex therapist and coach to do self-pleasuring practices. And I would literally rather write an essay than do a self-pleasuring practice. And I'm like in tears, like, why is pleasure so scary? Or why is pleasure the last thing that I want to experience? Like I will do the laundry before I do a self-pleasuring practice. Anyway, so had a breakthrough. Was overwhelmed with just love and grace and just a sense of a clean slate almost within me and my body and my sexuality. And I heard the word that, like, we love you, child. We love you, child. And it was so feminine. It was like the Holy Spirit, but like voices of many women, like, we love you, child. We love you, child. And I just was overwhelmed in tears. And I felt like there is this softness in being held. And I knew my naked body and my post-orgasmic body. And it was just like, wow, the innocence is returning. And then, interesting enough, like, on my spiritual journey, my husband and I were exploring Catholicism and doing classes and meeting with the priest. And, you know, don't ask me for like, what that is. The work you do is like dismantling the patriarchy, and you like are interested in Catholicism. I know, I'm like, it's a mystery. I don't, but there's also a lot of mystical beauty and divine feminine in Catholicism. So anyway, my priest gave me this prayer to pray. And it is the Mary Undoer of Knots prayer. You can look it up. It's a powerful, beautiful prayer. And one of the lines says, cast your compassionate eyes upon us. That prayer to pray every morning, Mary, cast your compassionate eyes upon us. Mother, cast your compassionate eyes upon us. Like, I could feel it in my body. It brought me right back to that place of hearing the words, we love you, child. We love you, child. And just feeling held and accepted and loved by the divine feminine energy. Like, that's what I needed. That's what helped me come home to myself as a woman, this belonging to a deeper, greater, beyond lineage of the feminine. And there is this such spaciousness in the gaze of love. There's such possibility and healing in the gaze of love. And so I still pray that prayer every single day. And then I've taught my clients it, that just that line and just that practice of looking into the mirror and practicing looking at yourself with soft eyes, practicing at looking other women with soft eyes. Like, that's one thing we do at the start of every call in the Embody Academy, is just like gaze at each other with eyes of love, because it is doing something deep in our nervous system that we need. It's showing us at a deep level that it's safe to be who you are, to show up exactly as you are. And in a circle of women, you'll be loved and accepted, which I think all of us need that reprogramming.
Oh my goodness. Even just being witnessed in that way, having a group of women look at you in that way. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest fear I notice in the circles that I host, is the fear of being seen by other women. And some people would rather do one-on-one coaching just so that they don't have to interact with other women.
I know. Yeah.
And it's because it just shows how deep that wound is. And I wanted to ask you about this, and I think it directly connects, which is, you talk about breaking the trance that women are in, all of us are in a trance before we start doing deconditioning work, but specifically with your work, the trance that women are in that keep them in this cycle, and also keeps us looking at other women in this way.
Yes.
Keeps us from true intimacy, friendship, sisterhood. Yes. Could you describe that trance for us?
Yeah. And there's multiple trances, but just in general, what trance is a hyper-focused state. This comes from hypnotherapy. Like a hypnotherapist, the goal is actually to get the client into a trance state. So trance state is a state of hyper-focus. And there's a lot of power that comes when we're hyper-focused. But like all things that's powerful, the power can be used for good or for harm. And we all often harm ourselves when we get into these hyper-focused states around one particular identity. And so trance that so many of us are experiencing and we don't even realize it, it's this hyper-focused identity, like one particular identity. Maybe it's who we were at 8 years old or 15 years old. And just like trauma brings us back to an early experience of when that trauma happened, trance works with that. And so one of the key characteristics of trance is called pseudo-orientation in time. And so that plays out like whenever you feel like you're back being 6 years old again, that's your cue. You're in a trance. And a lot of women feel this way. And one of the things that people really resonate with the work that I do is like, oh my gosh, I had no idea other women felt this way. But it's like, I still feel like a little girl. I still, like, even though I've had these accomplishments, whether it's motherhood or six-figure business or, you know, other personal things, that is like really like, yeah, I'm a woman now. I'm a 40-year-old grown-ass woman. I still feel like a little girl. And I thought I was the only one. And so there's a lot of trances that I've associated with our different energy states. For instance, like working with the soft eyes. And so I associate that with the sixth gate. So the sixth energy center, the third eye point. And with that, the trance is perfectionism. And perfectionism also goes with comparison. So seeing, you know, eyes are so powerful, but when we feel like we need to be perfect in order to be seen, like that's a trance. Or when we see another person who we consider perfect, another woman who, oh my gosh, she's so perfect. And we feel less than and feel inferior and that we can't show up in our fullness because she's already taken that place, that first place. You know, that's part of this trance, this idea that there's only one person is allowed to shine. And so that, I mean, there's also trances around shame that's connected to our second gate, the second energy center, our sexual energy center. So there's a way to start coming home to yourself just by observing where do you go when you kind of like check out? What takes you out? Is it shame? Is it imposter syndrome? Is it comparison? Are you scrolling through Instagram and all of a sudden hit with like, I'm not as perfect as she is, or I'm not blank as she is? Do you go into fear? Do you feel unsafe in your body? That's a trance state associated with the first gate, like our root energy system. So, you know, this is just my way of working with so many of the wisdom traditions that I've got to learn from and glean from, everything from tantra to hypnotherapy to energy healing to deep feminine psychology. I love it all. And I've been learning for the past 20 years and just, it's been so important to me to understand kind of the unconscious mind and the unconscious world, that I just want to give women the same tools, but if they don't want to spend 20 years going around that same path, I wanted to create a framework that would be very easy for them to, number one, start identifying the trances that they're in, because that's the hugest part of it. As soon as you realize you're in a trance, you're no longer in the trance. Like when you're fully in the trance, you're hyper-identified with it. That's the only reality. Someone could try to tell you you're beautiful, but if you're in the trance of feeling like in perfectionism or comparison, you're not going to be able to listen to them. Like you're not going to believe them. So when you're fully in the trance, there's no like other ways of seeing perspectives. But when you start breaking the trance, like as soon as you realize oh my gosh, I was in a trance yesterday. Like you can even start naming it like that as a way to start bringing more spaciousness between that, who you are in that particular state, which is like, this is not who you are at your core. This is not your identity. It feels that way. And it feels like this is all I'll ever be. This is all that's ever possible. I'll always return here. That's another characteristic of trance. It's like, it's that state of feeling like this is the only reality. But when we can start identifying it, and then the second step is start connecting to the resources. So just like every energy center kind of is a portal to a trance state, every energy is a portal to your resources that bring you back to your wholeness. So we started talking about the soft eyes, and that practice is actually a portal back to wholeness for your sixth gate. So it's a way to break the trance of perfectionism. And there's a lot of things that I've helped women kind of identify. Like if this is where you struggle, here are some resources that will help you, number one, break the trance, and then create a new pattern. And this is the things that doesn't happen overnight. This is why my programs are several months long, is because it takes time to practice and to start rewiring. Because that's at the end of the day, what we're doing is we're giving our nervous system another choice. When I scroll Instagram and someone is celebrating something awesome and she looks great, I don't have to go into shutdown mode. I don't have to feel less than anymore. I can actually automatically celebrate with her. Like my body's response can actually feel expansion instead of contraction. So
I love that.
I have so much to say on all this. I love it so much because it's so clear. And women are brilliant. You're so smart. Like you're so intelligent. So it's just using that intelligence to be able to track your own energy, mm-hmm. and then to be able to guide yourself and to become, this is what I love, stewards of your own emotional destiny. Because we may not be able to win the lottery or control every aspect of what we desire, but we can definitely become great stewards of our emotional destiny. Like, that's absolutely within our power to do.
Well, I mean, being a steward of your emotions is just one way of saying being a steward of your energies, which to me is the same thing as boundaries. I think people really think boundaries are about other people, but really that's being a steward of your own emotional world, of your thoughts and of your actions, which again, with the three centers, it all aligns with one of the centers.
Yes.
Oh, I had something I was going to say in response to that, because it was developmental theory, because really, I mean, we could map someone's trauma, big T trauma, if it's like horrific, or a little T trauma, but those things that happen in our life that bring us away from ourselves. To, if you call the chakras or the different imprints, the different woundings, the different trance states, all with different developmental ages, and it would perfectly align, because that's the wisdom of the body.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. And so there's so many ways we can organize information, and I love it, because it does help us get access to new ways of seeing, new perspectives. And so, for instance, like how I understand like the head, heart, and honeypot is healing central, because it's like holds our past. We store so much into our pelvic bowls. And so we can access that on purpose to be able to heal the past. And so we don't have to keep reliving it. And I believe, like, just like the body can heal itself given the right conditions, I really believe the soul, like, knows how to find its way back to wholeness. And part of the reason why we keep repeating these patterns is like, okay, here's the sliding doors moment when we can actually exit this crazy cycle. Like, the more awareness we start bringing with it, and this is how I start every Embody Academy with this, just this question to my students and clients, like, what if the only thing separating you from the woman you're created to be is the quality of your attention? What if, like, it was only about the quality of your attention? And this is another thing that I just believe so deeply and repeat, have it on repeat on my Instagram, is like, all love begins in the act of paying attention. Love is the superpower. Love is what ultimately does the transformation and makes it sustainable. And love is the goal. We all want to get back to a state of love, whatever that means for us, whether love equals freedom or love equals belonging or love equals oneness or love equals okayness, like a deep sense of like, oh, I'm enough. Everything's okay. Like, this is the superpower that we get to work with and also are desiring. So attention, learning how to be with yourself and to be so tender. One of the meanings of Tantra is actually tenderness. There's a connection between the word Tantra and the word tenderness. And Tantra could be seen as a system that helps you tenderly go beyond your limitations. And I believe that's the power that each one of us have within us when we practice soft eyes or when we practice other things that give us access to our wholeness, that we can start paying attention to ourselves in a really loving way that sets us free.
I just love this so much. And just the things that you keep saying, like, feel so, I could distill them down as you have capacity to choose, and you have capacity to choose in a way that's aligned with your wholeness.
Yes.
That your wholeness actually never went away. It's just these trance states and these imprints that take us away. Some of my, I really like fourth way teaching. Enneagram actually comes from fourth way teaching, but two of the main practices that they teach is the entire body of work. Like, they're like, the all of the work is self-observation and self-remembering, and that's it.
Wow. Yeah, that's it.
And it's like everything you're saying is like, you are whole, remember yourself, notice yourself in the trance, and then remember yourself again.
Yes, that reminds me of like my favorite line from a T.S. Eliot poem. It says, there's only the fight to recover what has been lost and found and lost again and again.
Yeah.
That's it. We're just like, we're here to remember. We're here to remember again and again, and to recover it and to reclaim it and to help each other remember. Because when we remember, it would become a mirror of like that truth for each other. And I feel that when I'm with you, Madison, like there's this goosebumps of like, yeah, we recognize this. And this is like also goes to that everything's a mirror. The whole universe is a mirror. Like this, I did a vision fast, was it a year and a half ago, where I spent 9 days out in the wilderness, and it was 3 days solo Vision Fest alone. So we all went out and found our space in the forest on the land with no shelter, just a sleeping bag and a tarp we could put up. No timepiece, so we had no idea how much time was passing, and no food. We had enough water to last us for 4 days. Each one of us were alone. But the whole idea is that you go out there to be with nature and to allow the universe to mirror back for you whatever you need to know is true about yourself at the deepest level, without the common constraints of modern day life. You know, we're going back to just the place of asking the question of the universe, like, show me who I am by showing me who you are. And what I got from that experience is that I'm safe. I'm safe. Like, death was, you know, I was walking around in my path and I would see death and I would see animals and I would see, but ultimately I'm safe and it's beautiful and it's okay. We're okay. And so anyway, I do believe it's really important to understand things as a mirror, because then everything that's happening in your life becomes an invitation to lean in and be curious and to learn something to go deeper into your soul's journey instead of feeling shut down and like a victim.
Yeah.
And that was really clear to me as a single mom. I didn't plan on getting pregnant. And the father, we have a beautiful redemption story now, and the father is now back in our life, but he skipped out on us both, and it was major rejection, major abandonment issues. And I could feel the pull back into a deep, dark state of depression and victimhood. It was like so right there, like knocking at my door every single night. And the act of like really choosing, like, I got to stay so present and remember who I am, remember what's possible. And the phrase that helped me was, every single moment is a fork in the road. I can choose again. And it's like, even if I made a bad choice 2 minutes ago, every single moment is a fork in the road and I can choose again. And the fork is basically love and fear. Like, all the wisdom teachings teach that. Like, you can choose between love and walk that path, or you can choose fear and walk that path. But what I, and there's that teaching in Christianity, but what I feel like Christianity misses out on is the idea that we can always choose again. Every single moment is a new possibility. We choose again. No one's damned. No one's disqualified. No one's out. Like, we actually get to come back to ourselves, remember who we are, remember what's possible, and with courage, choose and take a step in the direction of love.
And that's literally what grace is.
Oh, grace. And I love that you use that word, Madison, that you like really come into that word this year.
Mm-hmm.
Will you share a little more? Like, I'm sure you share a lot, but just how you see it in relation to this.
Yeah, I love the topic. It's a question I ask actually at the end of every interview. So I'll ask you the same question at the end of the interview, because I feel like, you know, in my early 20s, whenever I chose Christianity, I, like you, chose Christianity on my own. And the idea of grace made so much sense to me. Mm-hmm. And I, partly because of my own history with so much trauma and abuse in my household, I actually did believe I was bad. And like, at that time, my understanding of grace was very much like, I need a savior because I'm so bad. Mm-hmm. But there was an attraction to the Christ message for that reason of like, I needed something to be a stand-in for me because I didn't believe it for myself, which I think is really beautiful about the Christ story, because yeah. When we are ashamed, mm-hmm. it's easier to have a stand-in
mm-hmm.
than to offer that to ourselves. Yeah. So I wasn't ready yet to experience that grace to myself. But the way I see grace now is really that, like, all of life is a gift, and it's an orientation to everything being a gift, everything being for me. Mm-hmm. And I think, which I have believed for a long time, like, I've always felt like things come easy to me. And I actually think that's because of how hard my childhood was. Like, I don't know if that's actually like actually true. But I think it created a resilience in me. And, you know, I hear people talk about resilience in all different kinds of ways. Like, mm-hmm. you shouldn't have to be resilient. But I think, I personally think that's incorrect. I think that if we even look at what keeps humans alive the longest, it is being faced with practical obstacles every day, even in their physical environment. What keeps our body well are obstacles and learning to overcome obstacles. Yeah. And that's how we evolve. And so, you know, I can't say that there's no purpose for suffering. I would never tell someone when they're in the middle of suffering that, like, there's purpose, blah, blah, blah. But yeah. Whenever I look back at my life, I find so much purpose in my suffering. Yeah. And I don't identify with it. Like, I don't identify with it in that I need to recreate it to, like, have some sort of identity of, like, I only got where I was because of all the suffering. Like, I don't believe that, but I believe that because of the suffering that I've experienced, I really, really see all of life as a gift. And I also think being so wrong about my evangelicalism and being so righteous for a time in my life, and then losing that and, like, that big ego death, the willingness to be so fucking wrong and so humiliated. And I honestly don't know a lot of people who understand grace in a way where it's like ultimate surrender to the divine, who haven't in some way lost an identity that they felt humiliated to lose.
Yes. Yeah, I just got goosebumps because, yeah, for me, I really resonate with that because motherhood is an easy thing to talk about, but really what preceded the motherhood was a loss of my identity and an ego death because, like, I was no longer, you know, the way I came into motherhood wasn't planned. And so I lost my identity and it was a complete unraveling of who I thought I was and what I thought my value was in the world and needing to build it again from a different place. And grace was a huge part of that. So grace, the way you talk about it, I could just listen to you talk about it all day. And I think what I would hope people hear is it's to not be afraid to quote unquote make mistakes or to mess up or to get it wrong, because you're always met by grace. You know, people would say, man, you messed up. You had sex out of marriage and there you got knocked up. And of course the person didn't want to be with you. Like, you're a little hussy. but that mess up or that mistake ushered me into, like, this beautiful self-initiation as a woman.
Yeah.
Like, getting to choose a whole new way, like getting to define womanhood for myself and getting the gift of a reset. Because one thing that I would be so curious to hear if you agree with this, that when you're an outcast, like, there's a lot of freedom in that. And so, yes, there's a lot of pain of not belonging anymore, but there's also the reclamation of your own freedom. And it's like, if people don't understand me anyway, or if they think I'm a heretic anyway, or if they think I'm this or that anyway, then I might as well go full on into who I really am.
Yeah. I love that. Feeling misunderstood was such a big part of my life for so long. And it was something I, like, really had to let go of to actually feel free. Because I was so wrapped up in feeling misunderstood that I wouldn't allow myself to belong anywhere. Mm-hmm. So totally. I was like, they wouldn't get me even if I tried, you know? And so then being a hyper loner, I actually wanted to circle back to something you said about death in the forest, because I'm just thinking about you out there, you know, observing. And this might be really dark. I have found that I have a really dark sense of humor. Every time I have a drink, I make a really horrid, profane joke about, like, the most horrible things. I think it is so funny. And everyone looks at me like, what in the world? And I'm like, was something wrong with me? Why do I do this? But I would beg to say that death is also grace.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Who wants to live forever? I don't know. I mean, I know people are trying to these days, but I think that there's a surrender to natural process, a surrender to humanity that comes in the reclamation of the feminine that we didn't see in the way that patriarchal religions, like evangelical Christianity, where it's like, live this life and then the next life and the next life. But I see this reclamation of earth-based religion returning and earthy, well, I should say spirituality and feminine spirituality, which seems more in line with cycles and understanding that death is a part of the cycle and every stage of the cycle is grace. There's grace in it. Mm-hmm. And I have my own ideas about like our even our response to the pandemic and to all of this grief. And we as a culture don't even know how to reconcile with grief because we don't see it as a valid part of our existence.
Right.
Which means we can't see death as a valid part of our existence, which means we also don't see birth as valid and we try to hide that away, which again, all has to do with the feminine and the earth. And so I think all of it is grace. Mm-hmm. And when someone is willing to be, I shared a poem about this recently and it just felt, I shared it on the podcast actually about being undignified, but if when
I love that.
You're willing to be so undignified and being a heretic, mm-hmm. and you said, I think you said a hussy. Is that what you said? The heretic hussy coach.
I'm the heretic hussy coach.
But being willing to be that and also knowing that there's going to be misperceptions, mm-hmm. and that I think that there's such wisdom in that transition from the misperceptions mean something about me being wrong to the misperceptions being everything about the culture being distorted.
Yes.
That is such a redemptive mm-hmm. switch of orientation.
It is. I remember it was like another moment where it was so clear to me because it's also about coming into self-leadership and sovereignty is when you switch that orientation from why don't they understand me to how can I just be? And I remember like I was making a shift in my persona online, you know, like I've been on Instagram for a long time. Yeah. But it's a funny story. Like I thought Instagram was a filter, like a photo filter. And
like an app for photo.
Yep. Uh-huh. Do you guys remember Hipstamatic? So my very first photos on Instagram, I was like pregnant with my daughter taking sexy selfies. I've been taking sexy selfies for a long time, folks. And so my very first photos is like me in like these lace stockings and a giant like pregnant belly. And I didn't delete them. They're still up there. But I thought, I'm like, oh wait, this is a social media thing. So anyway, like long journey from there. But like my persona on Instagram, when I first started getting a lot of followers, a lot is relative, but from like 30 followers to like hundreds or thousands I was a Christian yoga instructor. And I had a YouTube channel teaching Christian yoga. And that was like in the thick of my evangelical days. And it always felt a little bit like a performance. Like I needed to slide in all these scriptures in order to prove I was a Christian. And when that started sliding away, and I started really embracing the way that I was healing around my sexuality and coming home to myself and helping other women do that. I mean, it was a huge pivot and there was a lot of DMs in my inbox about me being a heretic and am I even a Christian anymore? And I'm leading people astray and you're a Jezebel. Like, why are you so immodest? Like posting
you're a Jezebel.
All of it. And I remember very clearly, it was like this, like, cause I was crying out cause I was like 4 on the Enneagram, like, needing to be understood is like really core to feeling this belonging. And I was obsessed with like the pain of not being understood. Like, don't people know my heart? Don't they know my heart? And it was like a really clear download. And the voice just said, like, seek not to be understood. Just seek to serve. But not serve in like this way of like, I need to please you. No, seek to serve through your very being. Like, own who you are and be proud of who you are and know that you stepping into your freedom in that way is the greatest service to the world because you're giving so much space for other women to just own who they are. And that's another important message about feminine wholeness is there's not one way to be feminine, to be whole. Like each of us are called in our unique ways and like owning that is what will set each other free.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, do you want me on my soapbox, Madison? Because let me just for a moment say this, like public service announcement, like owning your feminine wholeness does not mean eating all organic and refusing to wear makeup and not caring what anyone thinks of you or not even needing to get dressed up. No, like owning your feminine wholeness means coming home to yourself and owning her. Like whatever, like if what you make conscious, you make yours is kind of one of my like philosophies. And so you want breast implants? Go get yourself the breast implants. Like you're not a bad feminist, you know? And there's all these ideas about we start policing each other around womanhood on either sides. Either you're too modest or not modest enough, or like you're too appealing to the male gaze and you should be you know, why you dyeing your hair blonde? Why are you dyeing your hair at all? Let the gray show. Like, there's so much policing going on that I'm just like, no. In my circle, there's none of that. I come in here and just, it's a safe space for you to try on different ways to be a woman. One day you want to be all boobs up to your chin. And next day you want to like shave the side of your head. Like, all of it's welcome here.
I love that you name that, because that hyper-focus on what other people are doing, that's really none of our business, is a way that we are taught to keep other women in line. Yeah. And it's honestly, it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. But I will have none of it.
I saw a TikTok the other day about big bimbo energy, and I loved it so much because they were talking about how it was a woman who was a feminist talking about how people will say like bimbos are just, you know, giving over to the male gaze. And she was like, absolutely not. They're playing the game. They think they are amplifying the things that they have been taught are wrong, and actually using it to wield their own power.
Yes, but you make conscious, you make yours. Why not play the game? But like, you're the one in control. You're the boss. You're in the driver's seat. This is what I tell my clients. Like, you're the boss. You're in the driver's seat. What you make conscious, you make yours.
Yeah. I also just have this weird thing. I think it comes from being a non-Christian raised then in the church like you are.
Yeah.
And I find I still live in the town where I was very religious. There's like 4 Bible colleges here. You can't go to a coffee shop without seeing people pray over their Bibles and like, you know, ministering to one another or whatever, or trying to save me. You know, that has happened as well. And I love being provocative in those spaces. And I've learned to like not be that way all the time, because
your TikTok of you like getting down, feeling yourself with the ocean song.
People were upset.
I really love that. Like, I was like, yes, more of that.
I thought it was so funny, but I realized.
No, real. Like, that's me. You're just like, that's me when I listen to worship songs. I'm like, yeah.
That's how I actually feel.
Yeah, that's the way I actually feel too. Divine feminine flowing through.
It's the provocativeness of it, though, feels so much more fun. You know, I've spoken to a client. I hope she's listening. Hi. One of her goals we've talked about and laughed about in our groups is to be a spectacle. Just this provocative, and not everyone is called to be that way or have that, you know, energetic imprint, but some people do. And I think that's kind of what we're realizing as a collective, is that some people have a different energetic signature, a different true nature, a different true essence. And we don't know what that is. And also, why not play? So if we can just take the judgment off, how much more range are we going to have to explore not just sexuality, but gender and expression and playfulness? And whenever I think of feminine wholeness, I also think of, we can't even access feminine wholeness without accessing the parts of us that need to feel safe, which is masculine energy. So either way, we're becoming whole.
Either way. Yes, exactly.
I get real fired up.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's like, we're also attached to these identities that are illusions. They're making illusions. And so let's just play with it. Like, in the Heal Your Own Gaze course, which is like a course to help a woman see herself clearly and love herself, like love her body, love her sexuality. We really play with that idea. I mean, it's a course like used as sexy selfies as art therapy. And it's like, okay, it's all an illusion. It's all an illusion. The good photos, the bad photos, it's all an illusion. Okay.
Yes.
So you might as well play with it. And there are archetypes that can help us play with it. Like, I really love the Sacred Fool for that, because she just like turns convention on its head and has a hell of a good time while she does it. And she invites other people back into their wholeness through that like joy. Like, she's not there trying to like throw up a middle finger at the world. And she doesn't carry any resentful energy. She's just convention's not for me. It's all an illusion anyway. Let's have fun with it.
The Fool is, if in my numerology, the Fool and the Wheel of Fortune are like the two energies of my life, if archetypally. And I used to feel like that was like immature, and so I would try to hide that I actually have a lot of that energy in me. And I've learned that it is such a gift. And like, I was really resentful for a while of like having to go first, being the friend that goes first and deconstructing, and then being, you know, the friend that comes out, and all of the, you know, the ways that it can be disruptive to be that way. But then also, whenever we can let go of the resentment of that like when people come in my DMs trying to tell me like, this isn't what grace means, this isn't what God says, or even the post deconstructed people who are like, but you should be more upset. I'm like, I just don't resonate with that. Yeah. And so I'm going to do what I want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's, and this is all we really want anyway. And this is what I tell my clients or even anyone who just asks me like, how do you show up so fully self-expressed? Like I really want that, but I am also terrified of my family seeing me on Instagram. Like, why am I like 38 years old and worried? Like, well, my mom thinks of my Instagram account and, or worried about what they think. We all have a they in our mind, whether it's like the girls from high school or, people in your town or the people you should go to church with. Like,
it's like someone's second cousin or something. It's like, what?
We're all worried what they think, but we can't forget what they want is freedom. Everyone freaking wants freedom. Everyone wants to be so happy being who they are and so free of resentment and bitterness around their past. Like, so if you could have that now, like, you've already won.
Yeah.
You've already won the game, like the whole game of just being human and just allowing, just being in that state of grace, like you say, Madison, where really experiencing that embodied state of it's all a gift. So how can I just be here with as most love and as most like crazy, foolish energy that sets people free and be the first on the dance floor and lead out in vulnerability? And I mean, all of that, if you have that in you and you're called to really lean in, like you're a pioneer for this new kind of womanhood that we're saying yes to, because we're tired of the old. We're tired of fitting into any box. Like I say, like, let's dance on top of these boxes until they like crumble.
Yeah. I love that so much. I think what I love about you, Morgan, is that like you really are a mystic, and I resonate with that so deeply, of like really feeling called to a mystic path and not being able to help it. It's kind of like the way that I am. And I so resonate with that energy in you. And I love that, you know, I watched the Dolly Parton documentary. Oh, I love Dolly Parton.
Yes.
I think she's so brilliant.
She said, find out who you are and do it on purpose.
Like, yes.
That's one of the best quotes ever. Find out who you are and do it on purpose.
She's so brilliant. And you remind me of her in that, like, aww. I think that
my
you
big
have
boobs.
Your big boobs and your blonde hair, but that you play up the image that you feel fun, that feels fun. And also that our culture has a lot of stories about.
Yes.
And it doesn't detract away from the depth that you have, in the way I think people, I almost want to say wish it would, because I think whenever we see someone who's embodying sexiness, wholeness, self-expression, taking photos, or even being femme in a way that we're taught is wrong, interestingly, both from a feminist lens in some cases and from a religious lens. And if it was to strip back all of that and just read and listen to you, because people listening might not have seen you before, so they might not know that you're like on Instagram and laundry and stuff until now.
But yep, lots of sexy selfies over here in my corner of the world.
But I think it is so fun, because that really is, whenever you say it's an illusion, like what I get in my mind, okay, I love Ariana Grande. I love the divas. I've always loved the divas. And I've watched a lot of Ariana Grande YouTube videos. And there was one of her, the car karaoke, whatever.
Yeah.
And he was like, I hear that you asked to be carried, and she's everywhere you go. And she starts hysterically laughing. And she goes, that's so stupid. Like, that's so stupid. And I feel like that's kind of whenever I hear you talking about, that's an illusion. It's like, so stupid. Like, who cares?
Yeah, it is. And like, this is like, I think juxtapositions like are so needed. Like, we need to juxtapose seeming opposites, because that's where we get to find a deeper level of truth.
Yeah.
Like, it's never either or. It's never either she's a bimbo or she's a brains. Like, and so those of us who can play with that, like, let's do it, because we need to juxtapose things that have been paired as opposites and to help our culture drop into a deeper level of seeing and witnessing and perceiving the world, perceiving reality. That, I mean, let's get mystical, Madison. Let's get mystical, shall we? Let's just go there. Like, because we confine ourselves. And we're making each other miserable. We're making ourselves miserable when we are so attached to a certain identity or a certain should.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's just turn it on its head and see what happens. Like, it can't be worse than it already is, can it? Like, it's, we can start just shifting the pattern. Like, one of the, I teach the technology of delight. Like, the feminine wholeness method is based on what I call the technology of delight. And it starts with attention. There's five principles, and it ends with disruption. Like, we're meant to disrupt. We are meant to disrupt from a place of love because people are asleep. People are in a trance. And so we got to be a little bit crazy. We got, and whatever crazy means to you, whatever it means for you to step outside your comfort zone and to help yourself wake up first and foremost, and then to help the people around you wake up. And so, yeah, I do it. Like, people, you know, who knows how long I'll be posting sexy selfies. Like, I may get bored of it. Yeah. And do something else. But right now, it literally is what lights me up. It's just so fun to play dress up. And I'm one of those girls, like, I'm very deep on one level mystical. And then I'm also just, I freaking love playing dress up. I love getting Rent the Runway and having a little photo shoot. I love leading retreats where all of us girls, like, get gemmed up and we just play. So, mm-hmm. And, but then in there, like, inviting people to question, like, who taught you to see this as this? Who taught you the meaning of a woman with red lipstick and stilettos? And who's benefiting from that? And just really get curious about why we think the way we think and why we judge the way we judge. And is it really serving us anymore? Because the way women judge other women, it's really limiting their access to their own sexuality.
Yeah.
Because if they're judging other people for other women for being so bodacious and they're sexual self-expression or just whatever that looks like, then it's going to be really hard to access that, that level of self-expression around sexuality for them. So, you know, everything's a mirror. Everything's a mirror.
I love that. I think my journey being a queer person has taught me so much about the ways that I had rejected certain parts of womanhood. And also parts of masculine energy in general. It's so fascinating. It's like just the onion just keeps peeling back layer by layer by layer.
You know what I learned when I was getting my lips tattooed the other day? The artist was, she sees faces all the time. And she studies faces and she's so good at what she does. Shout out to Lena at Studio Meraki in Portland, Oregon. But she was talking about the left, the feminine side and the left side. So many women prefer their left side of their face because there actually is facially and on our bodies more masculine side of us and a more feminine side of us. And the more masculine, carrying that energy of, it's like sharper edges and more just a stronger jaw or chin. And it's really interesting that even in the physical, there's this marriage between masculine and femininity in our appearance. And that's what creates our uniqueness. And also, it's also happening at the soul level. Like, that's wholeness. Like, we are learning how to work with these poles, whether you call it masculine or feminine, dark, light. Like, there's all these ways to talk about polarities. And the polarities are so interesting when you allow them to play together. Like, that's where, like, the power of the dance comes in and all of Tantra. Like, that's Tantra right there. Like, how do we play with these sacred polarities and what can get created from this? Like, all of the universe gets created from this polarity. So juxtaposition, another polarity, like how, you know, the superficiality of, let's say, a sexy selfie mixed with like the deepest levels of soul healing and shadow work and invitations to freedom and connection to God. Like, yeah. Yeah, it all belongs, right? Everything belongs.
All of it belongs. Okay, to sum it up.
Everything belongs.
Oh, so good. Well, let's jump into some rapid fire.
Fun.
You down?
Okay. Yes.
You've already answered some of these just in the conversation, but to keep it simple, what is your spiritual background?
The universe. My dad. Can I say a little more on that? The universe. My spiritual background is having ice cream sundaes with my dad and talking about the universe and how it's expanding and then it's contracting. And maybe it's always, you know, just those conversations with dad. He's an artist and lover of science. And that's my spiritual background.
Cool. How do you know when you know?
I feel delight. I feel an embodied state of delight. And it feels like Prosecco running through my veins.
I love that. I used the champagne example a lot for like being full of spirit. And so I love that you said that. What identities have you had to let go of to own your fullness today?
I've had to let go of so many identities. I've had to let go of the identity of being depressed, the depressed one. That's the first one, the strongest one that comes to mind.
What are you most enjoying learning right now?
The piano. The piano.
That's fun.
It's so fun. I love music so much.
What does grace mean to you?
Grace means to me, you're good. You are so good. Your heart is good. That voice, that feminine voice. We love you, child.
What's your go-to coffee shop order?
Black coffee. Just give it to me. Give it to me straight up.
Yes. Last question is, what do you want?
What I want right now is heat in my bones. I want to travel again. I want to travel again. I want to travel and lead retreats again. Mm-hmm. But ultimately what I want is to experience delight. Like, I want to be a remembrance of joy for people. And I want to be that remembrance of joy for myself and my kids and the people listening right now.
Mm. Before we go, is there anything you want to leave people with that you feel we have left unsaid?
Oh my gosh. I would love to look into everyone's eyes and just say, you are allowed. Allow it. Allow it. Whoever that is within you that is begging to come out, allow her. Just allow her. Like, she's welcome here, and she will be met and received with open arms and so many women who are ready to cheerlead her. So it's time.
Thank you for tuning in to Everything Belongs. If you loved this episode, please subscribe and leave me a 5-star review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app so that others might find this podcast too. You can find the show notes and find out more about today's guests by going to madisonmorgan.com/podcast. And before you go, I want to tell you about Everything Belongs, the membership. For only $17 a month, join my monthly workshop gatherings that will serve as a playground and sacred circle to learn and explore a spirited life fully expressed in your worth, wholeness, and power. Members will have the opportunity to vote on podcast guests, pick workshop topics, send in questions to be answered live on the call, get a monthly journaling PDF, and members-only access to all of my coaching programs. If you're looking for a place to ground, gather, play, and explore all of the conversations shared here on Everything Belongs, then this is a space for you. For more information, go to madisonmorgan.com/membership. And if you're not following and chatting with me over on Instagram, please go do that now and DM me and let me know your favorite part of this episode. I cannot wait to hear from you. And until next time, remember that curiosity can be a portal to a rich life where everything truly belongs. See you next time.